7:44:16 till 8, in case you've not noticed, there's a presidential election going on and conflicting presidential messages. I Googled oil and gas production under Biden and Trump, and some of the results I got. Under both Trump and Biden-Harris, U.S. oil and gas production surged to record highs despite very different energy goals. Oil and gas production skyrocketed under both Trump and Biden. How U.S. oil production hit a record under Biden. Big oil is doing way better under Biden than under Trump. Why oil companies are raking in record profits under Joe Biden. I don't know. Let's see what's going on with Eric Smith, Professor Eric Smith, a professor over at Tulane's Institute of Energy. How you doing, Professor?
I'm doing fine. How are you this morning, Tony?
I'm very well, sir. Remember, you got to keep this on the eighth grade level so everybody understands, including me, all right?
All right.
Let's
we'll
talk about
it.
Oil is not oil, and I don't know how would you, from the economic standpoint, from the energy production standpoint, from the profit-making standpoint, how do you gauge where oil and gas production is now in the United States?
Well, one of the things that's happened in the last 10 years is we have become an oil exporter, and that means that there's a whole bunch of people out there that don't care what the president thinks, whether he's a Democrat or a Republican. We're actively participating in that international market. Some people are upset about it, particularly some of the Democrats. And what they've done is sort of used marginal policy, if you will, very short-term policy. We're in the middle of an election year. And they have done things like put pauses on LNG exports, which isn't strictly oil, but it is energy. They have delayed pipelines and other infrastructure that you need to move oil and gas around. So in the short term, I would say that oil is setting records in spite of the government's effects rather than because of
So,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I know you and I have had conversations before about President Biden and a love-hate relationship with oil and gas. It seems as though initially in the administration he was trying to curtail that as much as he could, domestic production. And then he kind of changed his mind when he realized, and correct me if I'm saying anything inaccurate here, that probably wasn't going to work.
Well, I think he figured out... And I think both candidates are guilty of telling people what they want to hear. But
precisely. I want to be clear about that, too.
So when he's speaking out in California, his story is a little different than when he's speaking in Louisiana or Texas. And that's true of both candidates. One thing we need to worry about here in Louisiana is we are very, very dependent on energy as the main pillar of our economy. It represents about 160,000 jobs in the state out of about 2 million total. That doesn't sound like a lot, but they're the highest paying jobs we've got on average. So just the fuel sector, which would include some of the refining as well as the getting it out of the ground step, that's about 66,000 jobs. So it's about a third of our premium jobs are in the oil and gas area. You compare that to power, our friends at Entergy and Cleco, that's about 10,000 jobs.
Not only do what they say changes, sometimes their accent and tone of speech changes, Professor, depending on what area they're in. I don't know if you've noticed that at all or not. I say tongue in cheek. Let's talk about oil independence, because oil is not oil, and there's different types of oil that the refineries handle, correct?
That's right, and we've talked about that before. Basically, our Gulf Coast refineries are what we call complex refineries, and they're big. They're designed to basically process the cheapest oil they can find, which is usually heavy oil that's imported. We don't produce a lot of heavy oil ourselves, but it's imported. It takes a lot of processing, requires a lot of hydrogen to get rid of the sulfur in the oil, all those sorts of things. And that's the only kind of oil we really import anymore, is that heavy, sour oil. And the other side of the coin is that with the advent of all of the big shale plays, predominantly in Texas, like the Permian Basin, which spreads over into New Mexico, That's all relatively light oil, low sulfur oil. It's what the rest of the world needs because they don't have these big they don't all have these big complex refineries. So we've developed quite an export business for light sweet oil. At the same time, we're importing the heavy sour, or trying to, except most of the places we got it from are now under sanctions. So we're actually taking a hit in terms of our processing capacity because the refineries were, as I said, built to handle a certain amount of this heavy oil, and they're not getting it.
Is a sanction different than a tariff?
The sanctions are different than a tariff. A tariff says you can bring it in, but you have to pay a penalty. The sanctions say you can't bring it in at all, and if you do, we'll put you in jail.
Okay, that's a big difference. We'll take a break, pick it up here. We'll come back. I got a question about production on federal as opposed to private lands. I got another question coming in about if the government says one thing, but they ignore that, then what real role does the government have in all of this? Professor Eric Smith will continue to explain it to us in a way we can all understand. Professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, a lot of candidates saying a lot of different stuff, as they are prone to do. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:55, 5 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, trying to get the truth on oil and gas production in light of the presidential claims on either side of the aisle, Democratic or Republican. Drill, baby, drill, oil independence. Let me go back to that for a second, Professor, if I can. Can the United States ever be truly oil independent or energy independent when it comes to the type of oil that we need, or would it involve rebuilding refineries? Take me through all of that if you can.
Yeah, I mean, we could. We're oil independent now because we're a net exporter.
Okay.
We export oil after we satisfy all our own needs. And the problem is this $1 trillion or so of invested assets that we've got that are kind of designed to run on one mix of oils, and you would have to change that. I mean, it wouldn't be that you would stop producing from the existing refineries, but they physically couldn't produce as much diesel and particularly the heavier products as they do today. So if you want to be energy independent, we can all pay more taxes and we can invest that in refineries, and those refineries will then be able to produce the same amount of fuel as they produce today. But it will be because we're running more of that lighter oil that we are currently exporting and less of the heavier oil that we're currently importing.
So it is not as easy as saying drill, baby, drill, accurate?
No, it isn't, because it's not. That's that's a great expression that came out of Alaska the last time around, but it's essentially not a drilling-constrained business. We can drill faster and much more efficiently than we were years ago. So that we can get as much oil out of the ground as we need. It's just you can't use that oil for anything. It has to go through a refinery and petrochemical plants to be put into a shape that you and I as a consumer can use it.
Let's talk about drilling on federal and private lands and percentage of each, or how I don't understand how that works.
Well, the basically all of the Indian reservations and all of the national parks, all of the land that's owned by the federal or controlled by the federal government, has its own set of rules about drilling, and they are very lackadaisical in terms of their production because they're subject to so much political pressure. Most of our production comes from drilling on private land, and about the biggest concentration we have in the federal area is offshore, where you don't have any choice. It's either federal land or state land, but it's not your land. So that's where we do get a couple of million barrels a day of production that's on federal land. But the onshore federal land production is so tied up in red tape that it's at best stable production and usually declining. And people don't really even like to bid on it because of all of the restrictions.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time and your insight and your information. Eric Smith, Professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. It's Fall Prevention Awareness Week. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than one in four older adults fall each year. But many of those falls are preventable. And if those of you that have had elderly parents, as have I, know that a lot of problems start with people falling and breaking hips or shoulders or something else, and then that starts a cascade of failing health. So if you can prevent that, we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll also talk with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, about the New Orleans City Council's Utility Council meeting and about the power outages that have happened. And currently, right now, they got some people, or at least as of 13 hours ago, some people that are without power. So we'll talk about it when we come back, WWL.